Renovi? Is that how you say it, you think?
I think it's Renovo on our game.
No, not on our game at all. Welcome back to Horse Talk. It's Doc here with Dr. Rice.
Hello.
And Dr. Rice is fortunate enough to join us for, I think, segment 5 of who knows how many in Columbus, Ohio. And we were just chatting before we started the podcast. Quarter Horse Congress is here in town.
Yeah. Lasts almost all of October.
Have you gone over yet to watch some?
I have not yet. I really wanted to go this weekend, but had a conflict, so.
We had raining this weekend. Raining. Hopefully it was a good conflict to miss. To miss raining, but
I had to have my horse's feet trimmed. It's been a while. I've been having trouble finding a farrier.
We could have a whole podcast about how hard it is to find a farrier.
Yes, but I found one and it was great. It just went into the night. Is working nonstop trying to get horses ready for Congress.
Oh, Congress is huge here. The largest single breed show in the United States. And it is a large economic driver of the Columbus metropolitan area.
Yes.
In the past, used to go over and talk and give a lecture over there. They haven't contacted us recently. They have new marketing people.
Interesting.
So I don't know if we'll be able to go over and give a little talk or not. But still fun. I like to take the students over there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because the students don't know what horses do for a living.
Yeah.
They just see them in a stall.
Right.
And when you tell them, like, oh, this horse is a hunter under saddle, or this horse is a halter horse, those words don't mean anything to them.
Right.
And I think it's sometimes nice for them to see the horse in action.
Yes.
So.
See them all cleaned up and doing what they're supposed to do.
It's fun for us to go watch, to see these horses perform. I think my mom will want to go shopping at some point.
Yeah, good shopping.
She'll be like, I'll have to bring her over there.
Yeah, Western wear.
Western wear, some English stuff.
Some English stuff.
Yeah. I got my boots shined there.
Yeah.
Tack, yeah. There's usually good tack sales at the end. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of arthritis over there, too, running around.
There has to be with all those athletes.
And we don't do much vet work anymore. They have their own veterinarians that just travel the circuit with them.
Yeah, on site.
Care. So we usually just get the colics and the disasters.
Mostly the colics.
Mostly the colics and the disasters. We're, we're only, 10 minutes from the fairgrounds?
Yeah.
So we're a good place to bring your colic.
Yes.
Drop it off for the month.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do. We've had horses.
Yes.
They're like, oh, we're not leaving for a while. Just keep your horse.
Just
keep it. It's cheaper here than at Congress. That's probably a problem, but well, the last time I said I was on vacation, I did go to Maine.
Oh yeah, how was that?
It was good. I did not make it to the most eastern part of the United States.
No,
so I'll have to go back at some point.
Yeah, that was the goal.
We got some rain, so we had to change some plans around, and it was beautiful. I would suggest anyone go to Acadia National Park.
Yeah, did you do some hiking?
We did hiking. Yeah, we hiked 3 days.
Cool.
While we were there and climbed a couple little small mountains, and the mountains is kind of cool. They just grow right out of the ocean. So you hike to the top of this very small mountain, like 1,500 feet, probably a hill, and but it is called a mountain. And you look down, and there's the ocean.
That's really
cool. Yeah, they are the tallest, because I think they're the only tallest mountain chain, like ocean mountain chain in the United States, but I think they might be the only ones. So and I didn't realize Acadia itself is an island. It's an island off the coast of Maine.
That.
No, I had no idea. So the towns are islands. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have to check that out.
Sometime. Totally worth checking out. Very far drive, 16 hours. So
broke
it up over 2 days.
Yeah.
I'm too old to drive straight through.
Yeah, no.
I can't do that.
I can.
It's too much. Too tiring.
It's tiring.
And sometimes I get nervous staying at random hotels that my shit will be stolen. But
yeah.
Driving through this seems dangerous.
Yeah.
So.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. I know a lot of people do it, but I just can't.
A lot of people drink their caffeine.
Were you, when you were a child, did you ever go on, car trip places?
We didn't do a ton of those, but I know my husband did, and he used to drive through.
My parents, we didn't do a ton either, but they would always want to leave at, 2 in the morning. And I was still to this day, I'm why don't you just have a normal sleep hygiene? And wake up at your normal time so you're not exhausted trying to drive all day. And I know people do that. They're like, oh, I'm waking up at 3. I'm like, do you normally wake up at 3? You realize your REM sleep is the most important between 2 and 5. That's when you regenerate most of your sleep. I don't know. It drives me nuts that my parents would wake me up early. And then they.
But then you probably slept for the.
First I did. Part of it, yeah, and then but you thought it was great. But now they still think it's like yeah. My mom's like, well, why don't you leave at like 2 a.m? Because mom, I want to sleep. Like yeah. I enjoy my sleep. I need what they recommend 7 to 9 hours of sleep a day. I think I barely get the 7.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Pushing the 7.
I try really hard. Yeah. Otherwise, I feel like crap, and then I have to self-stimulate with caffeine, and you know that's good. They say motion is good energy too.
Oh yeah.
We have a lot of motion though all day. I don't know I don't know if I believe them. I think that's for the office worker that's just in a cubicle. They make them get up and walk around. That's fair. They say sitting for 5 hours a day is equivalent to smoking 2 packs of cigarettes.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's really bad for your cardiovascular system.
Interesting.
Yeah. You wonder, too, in that cohort of, like, if those people were maybe not the healthiest folks.
Right.
And that they worked all day and sat, and then, like, they went home and sat. And they were just very sedentary people. We don't have that problem in vet med. No. Most of our data is active.
Like, we would like to sit down.
I mean, the only time I sit, I guess, is when I'm driving.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're up on our feet getting attacked by horses. Yeah. Stem cells. Yeah, so we're going to finish up arthritis. I didn't get any more supplements to look at this week to look at. I'll try to find some more. But stem cells, people talk about stem cells, and you see all these papers about stem cells. I shouldn't say papers. You see all these advertisements about stem cells. Mm-hmm. Why are we using them? What do they do? Like, clinically, why would you use it?
Yeah, I think primarily the information is from human medicine, but you know, they're thought to promote tissue regeneration, and that's really more on the human side where they're growing organs and things like that, you know, in a lab. They also help to regulate the inflammatory response, which we've talked about a lot with osteoarthritis in the past few episodes. That happens with trauma, so they can help regulate that response from the body. And then, you know, as tissues are healing, they can also help reduce scar formation.
That's probably huge on humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horses, we just grow some hair, cover it up.
Yeah, and make it a brand or something.
Yeah, turn it into something brand. Tissue regeneration, like, I've seen some lectures with the YouTube videos where they have, like, the scaffolding of the heart.
Yeah, it's so cool.
And then they give stem cells to the scaffolding of the heart. It's like in a little, like, box.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, like, what, a month later, the heart starts beating?
Beating, yeah.
Just because it had scaffolding and the stem cells. Right. Like,
that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, like, stem cells probably deserve most of their use is, like,
right.
Take my stem cells, grow me some organs.
Right.
And give me a kidney transplant.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In horses, though, we're trying to use it for arthritis, some tendon injuries. So where do we get the stem cells from?
Yeah, so there are really two most common sites that we're getting them from. I would say probably the most common would be from the bone marrow.
Okay.
And there's a couple places that you can use to harvest that. Most commonly it's from the sternum, and that can be done with the horse standing, sedated, and then we'll also sometimes do it if we're already going under anesthesia for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
We can do it, you know, under the same anesthesia as well.
Do you like taking it from the sternum?
I do. You know, I think you get a good yield there. There certainly are risks of doing that. You know, there's been reports of people going a little too far.
I think the heart lives right below it, right?
Poking the heart.
Yeah. Do those horses survive?
Yes.
They do? Okay.
Yes, they do. I mean, obviously you don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
And it usually doesn't happen if you're careful, but
I've done a couple. I usually ultrasound the area just to make sure I'm on bone.
Yeah.
Before I poke a 14-gauge needle into the horse's sternum.
They're pretty big.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to suck some bone marrow out of the sternum. You could also get it out of the ilium. I don't think they like that much, right?
You can also harvest stem cells from fat.
And okay.
Because the difference between those two is that, you know, you can use stem cells either sort of right off the bat, not in a non-expanded form, or you can culture expand them. And
okay.
When you take harvest from the sternum, you can spin that right down, kind of stall side, and inject it in as basically bone marrow concentrate.
And there's probably some stem cells in that?
Stem cells in that.
Okay.
Whereas fat has an extra step that needs to happen with, you know, certain enzymes and things like that. So it usually has to be shipped off somewhere, so it's not really a stall side thing.
The bone marrow stem cells, though, we can also culture them, right? And make more of them?
Yes, we can culture expand those. That usually takes a few weeks to do that in the lab. And the advantage of that is that, you know, you're going to get a lot more cells that can potentially, you know, improve healing. And the population that you get is a little bit more homogenous compared to just pulling the, and, you know, spitting down the bone marrow.
And with the culture of them, we go to, like, what, 10,000 units usually, or 10,000 cells or something? A little ball of cells.
Yeah.
Are they stable? Like, when we inject them back into stuff, are we destroying some stem cells along the way, or?
Potentially, you know, once they have been activated, you only have about 24 hours to inject them.
Oh, okay.
So it's not something where you can kind of activate them, ship them, and store them for a while.
Yeah.
You can store them before activating them.
Freeze them up, yeah.
I forgot to say, when you do harvest the fat, it's usually from the tail head.
So young horses, race horses, might not have a lot of fat. Quarter horse Congress might be a lot of fat.
Chunky quarter horses.
They look the type, though. But they're probably fat. It takes a while to grow, and we get a huge population of cells. Do we think that these cells, so the older horses might not have as much bone marrow derived stem cells, so an older horse, would you be more likely to grow them up in the lab, or?
We'd probably recommend that. And sometimes what we'll do is we'll, you know, get it, if we're doing, you know, some sort of surgical procedure, we'll pull two aspirates from the bone marrow, and then we'll use one to just spin down, you know, inject at the time of surgery as bone marrow concentrate, and also culture expand.
That is expensive. It sounds like it should work. Is this true that, like, some of the bone marrow concentrates, like, people have grown bone by accident in tendons? You ever heard that?
I have heard that.
Yeah.
I don't know how common that is in horses.
In horses. I wonder, too, if it's just, like, they ultrasound it and it's just scarred down really weird.
Right.
And they're like, oh, it's bone, but it's not really bone.
Right,
it's just,
mineralized.
It's just mineralized, which tendons would do anyways.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And then one thing that we should probably make note of is that we're talking about adult stem cells.
Okay.
Not embryonic stem cells, which tend to be a little bit more controversial. The difference is that embryonic stem cells have the potential to differentiate into any of the tissue types. Adult stem cells are a little bit more limited, but less controversial.
Can the adult stem cells become?
It's a little bit unsure in what they become in the body, but in the lab, you know, they can become tendon cells, fibroblasts, multiple different tissue types, but probably not some of the, you know, organs.
Not the organs. Okay, so you need probably embryonic stem cells to become an organ. In the lab, can you, like, push the stem cells one way or the other? Like, if you're going to go into tendons, is there, like, certain culture stuff that you can do to, like, push the stem cells in certain directions?
Or? I'm sure there is. You know, I'm not super familiar with the culturing process, but...
Me neither. It happens in a lab far, far away where I don't know much about it. So stem cells can heal. So then we're going to take them and inject them back into the horse? Is that how it works? Or do we just give it IV?
We're usually trying to inject them into the source of the issue. So whether that's a tendon or ligament injury, or, you know, if we're treating damaged cartilage in a joint or osteoarthritis, we can inject them directly into the joint so that they're working right at the site of the problem.
Sometimes I feel like people get a little carried away and, like, use stem cells as, like, regional limb perfusions.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't think the stem cells know where to go. Like, they've been put into the vein. And I think the research shows they just end up in the lungs anyways, right?
It has been, yes.
Because there was like, you know, a clinic in central Kentucky that had a little, like, lay press article where they saved a horse from laminitis because they did regional limb perfusions of stem cells.
Right.
And they magically got the foot to grow back.
Right.
And I'm not buying that. I don't think the stem cells knew to go to the feet. I think it just seemed like a bad use of stem cells. I guess if the client has that much money.
Right. They are expensive.
They are expensive. But I rather feel like I want to target it. And even when we target it, they don't maybe even last that long in that tissue.
Right. It sort of depends. I think we need more research on it, too, in horses. You know, I think there's a lot in humans, but... You know, what we have seen in horses is that you know, they're really modulating inflammation more than, you know, actually turning into specific cells in the body. So
recruiting in new cells, kind of like PRP,
right,
to say, come here and heal this issue.
Right.
And maybe a couple of them stay around.
Right.
It, in different papers, when I've read it, like, they, you know, will inject it and then they, like, do biopsy of that tissue and they fancy markers and they're like, oh, we had 10,000 stem cells, now we find 3.
Yeah.
Or like 10,000 and there's 10. Yay, we have 10 stem cells. And so I don't know, like, if I'm convinced that that is the best use of a client's money.
Yeah.
I guess if they have all the money, then we could do it, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be jumping to stem cells as a good option at this point.
Yeah. You know, I think for those horses that are, you know, needing surgical intervention and things mm-hmm. like that, potentially it's worth the investment.
Okay. Why do you think that?
Treat them, like I said, mm-hmm. at the time.
Okay.
And expand the cells.
Yeah.
And help with inflammation. You know. But it is expensive.
Yeah.
Like if we collected them here and Dr. Durgham cultured them in the lab,
mm-hmm.
everything, including the draw and not including injection, would be about $1,800.
$1,800. I think that's still inexpensive, though, in the world of stem cells.
Yeah, for sure. And there are companies that actually
do it,
like market cells and things like that, which would not necessarily be becoming a little bit challenging because it's going under FDA approval to do. There's a difference between cells that are coming from your own horse
yeah.
and cells that are coming from a different horse, and that's going to be a lot more regulated.
Probably for good.
Right.
Could you just get some random horse off the street, have a bunch of diseases, take its stem cells, right, and then sell its stem cells?
Yeah, nobody wants
it. Nobody wants that. So if you had a horse for surgery, like, give me, like what's a case where you would use it?
I have used it most commonly, I'd say, in horses with the cysts in the medial femoral condyle.
Oh, those are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those ones will often, at the time of surgery, under anesthesia, aspirate mm-hmm. the bone marrow, spin down the bone marrow concentrate, and then inject that directly into the cyst lining, and then also culture expand for injection.
After, and you put a screw across the condyle?
And I put a screw across it.
If you were to design a study where you had a positive control screw only and screw plus stem cells, has anyone done that?
I think Dr. Sanchi has done, you know, without stem cells.
Yeah, they heal pretty good.
Yeah.
What about with stem cells?
I think there hasn't been a consistent study in
okay.
that.
I love Dr. Sanchi. I'm not sure. Do you think she uses stem cells?
I don't know. What she does.
I'd like to, if she's listening, which I'm sure she's not, she wants to let us know. Because Dr. Sanchi's to the point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if she believes it doesn't work, she will tell
she'll
you.
She'll tell you.
She will tell you. No question. Great surgery.
Yes.
Was she in Kansas now?
Oklahoma, yes,
Kansas. Yeah.
And then another cases we've used them in is tendon ligament, is that we've diagnosed on MRI.
And you just jam it in there?
Mm-hmm. Ultrasound guided.
And do we have any studies that say it's better than PRP?
Not good studies.
Not good studies. Yeah. Like company sponsored studies. Have you ever taken your bone marrow aspirate or your stem cells and, like, mixed it with the PRP broth?
I've never done that.
Me neither, but I wonder if you... There's only so much volume, though. I think a stifle, maybe,
right.
But, like,
right.
You're talking a huge volume. It might not work in a
right.
in a hole in a tendon. How often do you think we use them here?
I would say maybe a few times a year.
4 times a year, so not super common.
Yeah.
What do you guys do instead, like, if the client...
PRP. Most commonly.
Okay. For the little more practical, easier to use, little less expensive type of...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can do stem cells, and
yes.
The research is just not there 100%. I have a hard time.
Yeah, I think it's still in progress. I think it's still in progress in human medicine, too.
Human medicine gets in trouble because people hear stem cells and they freak out.
Right,
yeah.
Right, and that's because of the embryonic
stem cells. Yeah, and it's like, but I bet you a lot of time they're not using embryonic stem cells.
Right.
So, and some of the embryonic stem cells, like, they might be one embryo from, like, 1973
right.
that they're still growing.
Right.
But... I don't want to dive into the controversy of embryonic stem cells, but it's not like every day they're getting new stem cells.
All right.
Another product, so it's kind of switching gears at the end from stem cells, unless you have anything else about stem cells that you want to cover. Cool things. Do you ever make like a ball of stem cells? Like how big is 10,000 stem cells? Like, is it like a bouncy ball worth of stem cells?
No.
It'd be like a very expensive stem cell ball. So there's a new product on the market that I see practitioners using. This probably should go back, but we added this recently. It's out of order in our podcast series. This is more like a PRP IRAP product, but people called in and sent us some emails at drarley@gmail.com about Alpha 2 EQ. On the coast, I see a lot of people using it. On the West Coast, people are diving deep into this stuff. I don't know much about it. You said you did some research on it. What did you find?
Yeah, so apparently it's a large protein that actually is technically a protease inhibitor. So it basically blocks proteases, which are things that break down and sort of start an inflammatory cascade. Okay. It's a normal component of blood in humans and animals, but it's so large that it can't actually filter into
through the joint into
the synovial fluid. Similar to PRP and facilitates cell migration, it binds cytokines and damaged proteins with inflammation. You basically draw blood just like these other products from the horse, spin it down, and concentrate these large alpha 2 macroglobulin proteins and inject those into the joint.
Into the joint directly. Yeah. Supposed to stop inflammation?
Yeah, help decrease inflammation.
Do they have any papers out there about it?
There are a couple. They're company sponsored.
Oh, company sponsored. Those ones are usually the best.
Yes.
They usually find the most statistically significant data possible. So, and what did the company at least claim to show?
At least that is showing some improvement in pain.
In pain,
associated with osteoarthritis. So
you said that alpha-2 macroglobulin is too big to belong in the joint.
Right.
So do we worry that putting something that doesn't belong in the joint into the joint could cause an issue?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know for sure, but that seems like if the body didn't intend for that to go into the joint, maybe there's other things that...
There's a reason the body decided to keep it out.
Right.
So we don't know.
We don't know.
I have not used the system yet.
I have not either. I know it requires a similar, it has its own centrifuge.
Of course.
Just like all the other products.
Yeah, so you have to buy a centrifuge. Because they're so proprietary. Nothing spins at 3,000 RPM.
Exactly.
I've not used that yet. And then the other product that a client asked about was Renovo. What is this little thing over the O? What do you call that?
I don't know, but does that make it so you're saying like, oh?
Yeah, Renovo, maybe. Trademarked. And this is amniotic tissue allograft.
Yes, I think it's a liquid.
It's a liquid. I have a feeling the FDA is going to be looking into this soon because it's an allograft, right? So this is other animals... amniotic tissue.
Yes.
So that amnion tissue is basically just the part of the placenta.
Right.
And we use amniotic grafts for eyeballs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it works really good for a really bad ulcer.
Yes. And people put them on wounds.
And wounds. So I think they're just kind of making a company that puts it on wounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now they're looking at how it might
putting into a joint.
In the joint.
I'm scared of the joint. I don't know about that. The one paper that I could find about healing wounds showed there was no histological difference. The tissue itself was not any different than the control.
Right.
And they had more granulation tissue. And granulation tissue is not great when you have it in a joint. Like, fight granulation tissue. It's called proud flesh. Maybe you put a lot of dirt in there, you would have a lot of proud flesh also. I'm not sold on this product at this point. They keep saying on their website that they have research coming, but I don't necessarily know. There's some testimonials. I wonder if they're paid endorsements. I mean, there's a veterinarian that says it works, and another veterinarian that says it works. So they've been impressed with it. My clients have seen positive and lasting results. What does that mean?
I don't know, but it makes it sound good.
Makes it sound amazing. And then you can look on the internet and find all the clinics that are selling this product. I think if you look closely, Ohio State will not be listed for quite a while. I just wanted to bring it up. People are talking about it, but I have not seen any good research. And where are they getting it from?
Yeah, some horse.
Some horse placenta. They picking up off the ground and turning it in. We know that it does work for eyeballs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And humans, like, if you have a child, don't they save umbilical blood, like, for future stem cells or something? Yes. Like, you can sign up once you give birth.
You can also eat the placenta.
I hear of, well, animals do that, they but do I that. Hear humans also do that.
You can get it made into a pill.
Into a pill?
Yeah.
That sounds gross.
I've never seen it, but...
Do they say why they do this?
Apparently it's supposed to be good for you, I guess. I don't know. I don't know a lot about it.
I'm not wanting... you really want to eat your own uterus? It sounds disgusting. Like, I don't know about that. Cows eat a placenta, so the wolves don't come and eat the baby. Like, there's an evolutionary reason for that.
I don't. You never know what could come eat the babies.
That is true. So maybe these women... All right, maybe there's some people listening that have had a child that have eaten their placenta. Yeah. Send us an anonymous email.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know what it tastes like. And did you have magical growth factors?
Yeah, like, what were the benefits?
What were the benefits? I don't think there's any. I'm just going to go out there on a limb and say it didn't help. Maybe, I don't know. That sounds gross. But that's just my personal opinion. Dr. Rice, will you be eating placentas at some point if you were to have a child?
I don't plan on it at this point in time.
Eating placenta, eating that's placenta, good. Yeah. Eating placenta. Yeah, I will, if you do.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Let me know how it goes. I think we've wrapped up OA. Like, is there any more we can talk about?
Yeah, I mean... I feel like we've talked a lot about it.
Talked a lot about it. People have enjoyed the conversations. I think there's a lot of, well, not a lot of good information out there.
Right.
OA is a huge disease in horses.
It's huge. Yeah. And it costs the industry a lot of money.
And I don't think we can prevent it by, clearly there's no prevention that we've found.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. After everything we've talked about, there's only been a couple things that we say help, but nothing we've said reverses it or... you know, anything like that. Really just kind of trying to slow the progression.
Slow it down. If you were to give advice to a client and they were like, Doc, I got this $100,000 show horse. I want to do everything I can. Nothing's going to prevent it. What would you tell them to, like, spend their money on?
I would tell them to spend their money on, if they're interested in injection, to go the biologic route.
Yeah.
PRP wrap. I think those probably have the biggest bang for your buck in terms of long-term outcomes and longevity of the joint.
I think I'm there with you. Putting the biologics in the joint will keep this horse around as long as possible,
right,
and have very little deleterious effects.
Right.
And you can do it as often as you need,
right,
if that is actually the location of the OA. And for nutraceuticals or, like, stuff that people feed, I'm going to tell them probably not to feed it.
Right.
Yeah. Feed him a good diet.
Right, spend more money on diet, yeah.
Buy him a good diet. Attaquan and Legend.
Yeah, I don't think they'll hurt.
They're not going to hurt.
So, they might help a little bit.
Yeah. Decrease some inflammation, maybe, but it's not going to reverse. Nothing's going to reverse time.
Right.
And if it did, we probably would be retired if we found that product.
Yeah. We'd be rich.
We would be rich. And, yeah.
And one thing I want to know, as a surgeon.
Yeah.
That... obviously, if there is something in the horse's joint,
mm-hmm,
that's causing inflammation, like a bone fragment,
yes,
things like that, when there's a surgical option,
yes,
and you want to improve the longevity of
the horse, you should take it out.
You should take it out.
Wow, what a concept.
So, you know, leaving those things in is only going to worsen the progression of osteoarthritis.
Yeah, it's like having a rock in your shoe and keep running.
Right.
It hurts.
Just keep going. Yes.
Yeah, and it just makes it worse.
Right.
Leo, you do see it all the time. Like, oh, it's not bothering the horse.
Right, but it is, you know, causing...
cartilage damage.
Yes, yeah. Inflammation for sure, and that's going to, long-term...
not good.
Not good. So the sooner the better to address that, and we've talked about inflammation is the biggest,
mm-hmm,
component of kind of starting this progression of osteoarthritis, so whatever we can do to decrease inflammation.
So just for the client, so if we go in there arthroscopically, we take out a little bone fragment, clean the joint up, can you debride some of the arthritis, like some of the lipping and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Clean that up a little.
Yeah.
Plus your joint out real well. What do they get, 90 days off before they go back to work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 90 days. It's not that long.
It's not that long in the grand scheme,
yeah,
of things.
Not, and $2,000, mm-hmm, $2,200. What's a new price?
$2,100.
One joint. Out the door, $2,100.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like a bad deal.
And you can combine that with the biologics.
Yeah, and bone. Would you put in some bone marrow for a chip? No.
Depends on what it is.
PRP.
Yeah.
A little IRAP, maybe. Your vet has told you the horse has a chip. get it removed. Yeah. Maybe in the wintertime.
I like doing surgery, but yeah. Also it's just a good idea.
Yes, I don't do surgery, but I still think it's a good idea. Because, yeah, they just screw everything up in there. Take-home message. Biologics, and if there's something wrong in the joint, get it fixed. Well, thank you, Dr. Rice. I have been appreciated our time in the studio together.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, probably, maybe we can have you back if you have anything else you want to talk about orthopedic-wise.
Yeah.
Angulum deformities, growing a foal.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
What is it, October now? So, like, people should start getting ready for their foals. We could talk about a foaling thing.
We can definitely do that.
Well, that works, Dr. Rice. I appreciate your time. And again, if you guys like this podcast, please hit the subscribe button so you know when we launch a new podcast. And please share it with your friends.